Welcome to the Power of Stories. Willkommen bei die Kraft der Geschichten. Heute habe ich einen Interviewgast für dich aus Wales. I have an interview guest for you today from Wales. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch. The interview is in English. And you can put on the German subtitles on YouTube. Du kannst dir auf YouTube die deutschen Untertitel dazu schalten. Unter diesem Video ist eine Erklärung für dich, wie das funktioniert. And now I wish you Inspiration with Michael Harvey. Viel Inspiration mit dem heutigen Interview für dich. Hello and a very warm welcome to the Power of Stories. I have a guest for you today from Wales, one of the most famous storytellers of our time, I would say. So I heard him several times at Beyond the Border Storytelling Festival, and I was spellbound by the power and the magic of his storytelling. Very warm welcome, Michael Harvey.
Well, Annika, thank you very much for that welcome. I now have to live up to it.
Well, I start with the question you probably answered 100 times before, but still, I would really like to tell our audience, what made you become a storyteller? How did you decide to do it as a profession? What is your reason?
That's a very good question. And yeah, it was a bolt from the blue, to be honest with you. It was a proper road to Damascus conversion experience. I had been working, I guess, for 10 years, maybe more, working with community arts and particularly working with young people and doing street theatre. And then a friend of mine said, oh, there's this festival happening down at St. Donat's. Do you want to come down? It's called Beyond the Border. And I said, yeah, okay, fine, I'll come with you. So I went down with my friend and it was the first ever festival, all right? So it wasn't massive, but I quite liked it. I quite liked the vibe. The place itself was absolutely beautiful. This is the old site, which was down by St. Donat's Castle on the shore. Now, of course, Beyond the Border is up in a beautiful site in Carmarthenshire. But this was down by the sea. And I saw stuff, and some of it I liked and some of it I didn't like. And then it was getting towards the evening and it was getting very foggy indeed. I remember that. And you could hear the foghorn not far off blaring away. So I wasn't quite sure if it was worth staying. And then my friend said, oh, you need to stay because the guy who's on last, he's meant to be very, very good. And I said, okay, fine, I'll come. So I walked into this tent. And I can actually see the tent now. It was green and red and yellow stripes, a bit of a tatty old tent, actually, that had seen better days. We went inside. We sat down on these very simple benches. And usually, particularly at the time, but still there's in Britain, there's this transaction that sometimes happens between performer and audience. And that is, if I like you, will you like me? Kind of thing. So there's a kind of rapport game happening where everyone pretends to be friends. But this storyteller didn't do that. This storyteller came to the front of the stage. He was French. And he got to the front of the stage and he looked at the audience and he said, uh-huh, okay, you are probably all quite tired. I'm tired and it's late. So maybe you're not in the mood for a story because you see the story I'm going to tell you is 45 minutes long. Now that's quite long. And if you think that is too much for you, no problem. You go to the beer tent or whatever, go and have a cup of tea. But if you stay, you stay. And we'd never been treated like this before. And we stayed. Nobody moved. And the man in question was Abby Patricks. And he came to the front of the stage and he told the companion.
I've heard that one.
And I kind of sort of knew about stories, but I was a complete newbie for storytelling. And this, I can still remember the feeling I had when it got to the denouement at the end of the story. I felt my insides turn up 360 degrees. It was one of the most intense audience experiences I'd ever had. And then it was the end of the show and he got a big clap and I walked out. And as I walked out of the tent, it came to me, that's what I have to do with the rest of my life.
Wow. I just felt Like when I was listening to the story, I felt like it had happened to me.
that's how it works.
It happened to me.
That's what we do.
Wow. And since then, you've been telling stories in Wales and on festivals and all over Europe?
All over Europe, all over the world. I've been, the situation, the economic situation means that there's much less happening. But there was a time when I would think twice about doing the amount of traveling I used to do. But I've been to Australia, I've been to the Far East, I've been all over Europe, been to the States, been to Canada. Now I think I should calm down a bit, because it's not very good for the planet to do that. Frankly, I haven't done much traveling. We have had during COVID, of course, nothing happened. But then since COVID, we have gone into quite a recession and the arts are suffering. There's less opportunity and less money for cultural activity, unfortunately, because that's what we really need right now.
I receive your newsletter and you write a lot about creativity, which is really inspiring. What would you say makes creativity browse? What does it need to browse?
Well, I think there are some boundary conditions that are required for creativity to flourish. And I think, strangely, although we think of creativity as being about freedom, actually, if you restrict your means, you become more creative. If there are a panoply of tools that you can use, you don't know where to start. But if you just pick one and do one thing with one tool clearly with articulation, then you will get a result. Then you will start to have a communication and a relationship with the material. And the relationship with the material is really interesting, because there is a little bit of a Western mindset somewhere in the back of most of our heads, I think, in Europe, that we impose our will on inert material and we make a thing. Whereas in actual fact, particularly with story work, and you alluded to it earlier on when you said that you had the experience of the little story I told, is that the material is active, at least as active as we are. So when we bring our skills and awareness into contact with the material, as long as the material decides to like us, we're fine. And then the material will kind of at least do 50%, if not a lot more. Mm-hmm. So there's that understanding that it's not us, the great creative, going and making a thing because I got an idea in my head. It's about a relationship. It's always in relationship. And the result is always a surprise. In fact, if it's not, it's boring. The other thing that I really encourage anyone who works with me to do is to have a high wonky tolerance. Because again, because of our schooling, we're told that getting it right is what you should be doing. Actually, no. Getting it wrong, interestingly, is what we should be doing. And high wonky tolerance is the thing that I talk. Do you know what wonky is?
No.
So if you have a wheel that's just a little bit off center and it moves like that, I know people in podcast land can't see me what I'm doing. You have to imagine it. That's wonky. And there's a temptation amongst us who want to get it right to cover up the wonkiness. No, let the wonkiness be. And then you have to be authentic. Then you have to be, okay, yeah, I'm having a go, but it's not really working the way I want, but I'm going to keep going. And because of the relationship between you and the material, the thing, the great thing that you couldn't anticipate happens. That's what we're after. But if you try and get it right, you'll never get there.
It's true.
Yeah. And I could go on about this all day, but I mean, that's probably it.
What do you personally do when you come to a point in the story where you don't know how to evolve? Or what do you do, your personal plan when you need to be creative?
It's to narrow my focus and do something really simple and find one simple thing I can do that feels like it's having an effect. And sometimes it doesn't, and that's fine. And then if that doesn't work, then I find another simple thing to do that will have an effect. And when I say simple things, it's just using one of the really simple tools that we have. So for example, if you're thinking about the different modes of storytelling. You go, okay, there's this bit. I don't really know how to do it. I don't really know how to work. But wait a minute. I've got some modes. I can use action. I can use description. I can use dialogue. So why don't I just pick one of those? Okay, fine. I'm going to use action. Right. I'm just going to do this little section here in action and go for it and see what happens. And then you come in with a clear intention. And then you invoke a little bit of chaos. And you end up doing something you hadn't anticipated, but is the right thing. So you have to make the conditions in which the good accidents can happen.
I understand.
Which is tricky for people who have been taught that that's not how the world works. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's exactly how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm talking about stories now. Obviously, there are certain situations where, you know, 1 millimeter out of place means that something blows up. That's not the world we're in, thank goodness. That's why we've decided to be creative and not engineers. Oh, well, not that engineering isn't creative, but yeah.
Do you have a favorite character?
It depends. Yeah, I do, but it's never the same one.
You have one in every story you tell.
No, I kind of change my allegiance in the story and get annoyed with people as it progresses. So there's in the fourth branch. So I live in Wales. I've lived in Wales for 40 years, and in that time I have looked at the native material, and the centerpiece of that is the Mabinogion. Within the Mabinogion, there are various things, including the four branches. The longest and weirdest and most difficult one is the fourth branch. And in it, there's a character called Gwydion, who is both massively attractive and evil. He's a psychopath, I think, because he does the most horrible things. And he also gets himself into lots of trouble. He reminds me of some Native American tricksters because he has no conscience. He will just do bad things for no reason. Also, he will do bad things that boomerang back on him. So he ends up in a terrible state simply because he's enjoying using his power, which is both creative and destructive. So he's a kind of character that you want, you know, he's attractive because he's so powerful, but at the same time, he does awful things. So he's also repellent. And I think that is, and he suffers terribly because he got into trouble. He suffered really terribly. And, you know, eye-wateringly, yeah, it was horrible what happened to him. But actually, there's a redemptive thing at the end where he saves someone. Do you want me to go, do you want a little more detail on this? Or is this just?
Yes, please.
Okay, so very briefly, Gwydion is a storyteller. And one of the great things he did was go down to the underworld, which we call Anuvun, which is the unworld. And he led one of the few successful raids in the underworld. So the underworld is not hell, it's beautiful, strange, beautiful place. So he goes down and he steals things. That's never going to end well. But he has all this power, and then he is part of a royal family. And then what he does is he deliberately starts a war for fun, because he can. And as a result of that, one of his family gets raped. And this woman goes to the king, and the king says, all right, now I will punish Gwydion and his brother who raped the woman. And then what happens to them is that they are turned into deer. But one is male and one is female. They go out into the woods. They live as animals, but with minds of men, male and female, for a year. They have sex. They have a baby deer. They come back. The baby deer is taken into the castle, turned back into a human being. Then, punishment number two, they get turned into wild pigs. Same thing again. They come back. They take the little wild piglet into the castle, and it's turned into a boy. Third one, it's wolves. They're sent into the forest. They come back. The little wolf cub is then taken and turned into a human being and brought into the castle. And then the two men are forgiven because they've published enough, but they've been punished enough. So that is very deeply weird and dark and strangely just but extreme. So that's the kind of material that is in the stuff of Wales that I'm dealing with.
Wow, how much I love this Welsh mythology. It's really, really juicy.
Exactly, yes. And it doesn't make sense in the normal. You have to really work it out. So at the end of the story, what happens is that Gwydion, he's gone through all this horror, and then he decides he has to go and look for Llei, who is kind of he kind of sort of his son, and I won't go into it now because it's a very long backstory. But he searches and searches for him. Llei is cognate with the eagle, and he's finally found in a very interesting place. So he gets to an oak tree. Oak trees are sacred here. At the bottom of the oak tree, there's a pig. The pig is eating rotten flesh, with maggots and everything in it. It's the most disgusting thing you can imagine. And then Llei notices that there's something up in the branches. He looks up, it's an eagle. And the eagle is very, very thin. It's near to death. And in its side, there is a rusty iron blade. This is the blade from a spear. The shaft has fallen out, and the eagle is dying. Now, this eagle is Llei, is the kind of the sun god. And what Gwydion has to do is sing him down. So he sings and he sings, and bit by bit, the eagle comes down. He takes the blade out, takes him back home, and revives him. So the sun becomes alive again. So there's a kind of solar myth there. But then it's interwoven into a dynastic story whereby Llei is the last one of the dynasty, and he has already married someone who's disappeared in strange ways that I won't go into. And we know that he will never have children of his own. So that dynasty is finishing. So it's packed tight with stuff and resonance and magic that's deep and weird and illogical. And the other amazing thing about these stories is that they are in the landscape. You can go to the places where a lot of these things happen.
That would have been my next question, how you create the magic in your performance, and you already answered a bit of it. It's in the story itself, but still you evoke it in a way.
Exactly. And we were helped in that with we worked with a production company called Adverse Camber, who have such high quality work they put together. It's really, really astonishing. I've been very grateful to work with them on a couple of big projects. And they create the space in which we can be very brave and make mistakes and find out what shape the story wants to have. And I'm also privileged to work with some great colleagues. So Lynn Denman is a singer that we have worked with many times. Her voice is absolutely astonishing. And we also work with Stacey Blythe, who is a great musician. And I've worked with Stacey for 30 years, and we're kind of telepathic by now, which makes things easier. And we have a good laugh. We have loads of fun. And the Container is the production company, Adverse Camber. They make the conditions in which we can thrive. So they find the places for us. They enable us to go and be in the landscape where bits of the story happened and do some work there. We also work often with Paula Crutchlow, who's a dramaturg, and she helps us be brave and tells us when we're not being.
I think this was when the magic happened, when they were singing Welsh songs while you were telling the story over it. It was like many levels at the same time. You couldn't help getting really thrilled. It was
Great.
really good. Wow. And how do you encourage people to get the best out of themselves?
That's a really good question. I'm really positive when I work with people, and I don't tell people what to do. I watch, I try, what I do is, again, I try and do to with other people what people who have helped me effectively have done for me, which is to, one thing is to put me in the right kind of shit. So I need to be interestingly out of my depth. So I, what I try and do is I try and dose the level of difficulty. If it's too much, you just become completely disorientated and it's a really horrible experience. The other thing that I am totally against is telling people what to do. Very occasionally, if I'm working with someone who I know really well, I can take, because there's a relationship, I can go straight in and say, actually, no, don't do that, do that. Mm-hmm. But that's not common. It's more about making the place in which the person can thrive, and suggesting things, getting them to do stuff, stepping back to give the agency to the performer so that they can have a go, and pointing out to them when they've just been brilliant. Because that's the other thing, when you're in the process, you don't have the perspective that an outside eye can have. And a lot of it is not reflecting back what they've done wrong, but reflecting back what they've done right. And this is why I talk about high wonky tolerance, because in the process is wonky. And what happens is that the wonkiness is kind of there, keeping it going just about. And then after a while, the extra things that are getting in the way and making it wonky, they just fall off.
Mm-hmm.
And you find the thing itself then has a momentum and clarity that makes us all go, aha, yes, that.
How much work is in the background happening to create something really good?
No, but you know what? It's still play.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah. And if it's not playful, for me, there's something wrong, because that's where our creativity is. Creativity is play, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us not to get too intimidated by important creative protocols or the ways things are done.
Could you tell me what was the best moment for you telling a story and the worst?
The best and the worst. Now, that is a real challenge. Actually, well, in the process of telling or the process of making? The process of telling or the process of making?
Telling.
I think, okay, there were many, but there's one that I remember particularly, when the three of us were in flow, myself, Lynn and Stacey. It was in the top lawn at Beyond the Border, and we had already started touring Hunting the Giant's Daughter, which is the story of Culhwch and Olwen. And it's a big, big white tent, wide and not too deep, which is great, which is how we like it. And it was just, something happened and we were just all in flow. And it was easy. But it was only easy because we put in the hours beforehand. But it was like, oh, aha, yes. It was like the story's doing us now. And that felt like a real privilege. And yeah, that was one. I've had a few peak moments like that. And all the work, I love all the work. Even at the moment, I'm working on a new show and it's difficult and it's crunchy and it's awkward. But actually, I like that too, because it's part of the process and it's part of paying your dues to the story, that actually, to begin with, it makes you work.
Mm-hmm.
And the question the story is asking is, how much do you want to tell the story? And how well do you want to tell it? And that's what the grit is there for. They're kind of like, oh, I don't get this bit. Why is that happening? That character's horrible. All those things that come up, particularly in mythic material.
How much time do you give yourself to prepare a new show?
I don't. It takes the time it takes. So
you only announce it when it's ready.
Oh, no, we usually have if I'm working on a team, I have a deadline. And that's that. You know, having a deadline is a great way of focusing the mind. So we had deadlines for the big shows, for Hunting the Giant's Daughter and Dreaming the Night Field. And because there was a structure around us and there was a team, that made it possible. That really helped us focus. And helped us step into the story. So at the moment, I'm doing a version of Peredur, which is the Welsh version of Percival, but I'm doing it on my own, and it's trickier, much trickier. With a wonder tale, for example, I think that's an easier thing to do because there's the form is clearer, but myth is really messy. So I'm dealing with a messy myth at the moment, and I'm doing it on my own, and I'm going to be performing in a festival in England this weekend.
Oh,
so it'll be a tryout. So then it'll be like, oh, here, everyone, here's my little tryout. I hope you enjoy it. And then if it lands, then I've got plans for working with a musician and doing more things with it, and we'll see what happens. But it's kind of a tryout.
Yeah, I do imagine it's much easier to have a company with a musician and with, yeah, it's much easier than on your
And
own.
also it's great for accountability. Because like when if you're on your own, if you're in your own house, in your own room, it's very easy to put the kettle on. But when you've got a bunch of people there who are all only there to work on this piece, you just do a lot more work.
Do the stories, did they change your life? Can you say you come in situations where you can recall a character of a story and help you out of a situation?
Oh, yeah. Let me have a think about that one. There is something about, say, who's a kind of an eagle god and also kind of a human being, and that the tree with the eagle at the top and the rotten meat at the bottom and the sow, and then Llei coming down and being healed. I find I can't actually say why, but that's for me is one of the most potent symbols there are in the stories that we tell. And it's certainly in the second branch as well, it's full of violence. But there's a moment when they come back from a battle in Ireland and they sit on the shore looking towards the sea, and they've been through hell, actually. And then they hear the singing, and there are three birds, and these are the magical birds of Rhiannon circling around in the sky. And as soon as they hear these birds, all their sorrow disappears.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah, and you told us about your project now, and also you do workshops at the moment or in the future?
Yeah, I do. There's one more performance project that I've got under my belt, and that's something I started 2 years ago, which is it's storytelling, dance, and music, but it's not the way you'd expect. So this project's been on the go for a few years, but we finally performed it 2 years ago at Beyond the Border, and now I've just put in a funding bid to do it properly and take it on tour. And so that will be so if that happens, we will be touring from January on. And it's a show it's a Lady of the Lake show. You know, there are lots of stories about ladies and lakes. And this particular one, she comes out and she marries a man from the earth. And she tells him that he mustn't hit her three times. And what happens is, of course, the blows are inconsequential, like a tap on the shoulder or something like that. And then she goes back into the lake, never comes back. And once she's disappeared, the father dies, and then the eldest brother, so the lady from the lake's son, sees his mother walking through the forest, and she gives him the knowledge of plants and how to heal people. Once he's understood it, she goes forever, and then he has all the knowledge, and he becomes a doctor. He becomes a herbal doctor, and that he started a dynasty of herbal doctors in that area in West Wales, in Carmarthenshire. So that story is going to be something which, if we get the money, we will be touring. And the thing about it is, it's not, I've got a dancer, but she's not just dancing around. The game is, I try and tell the story to the audience, and she will just come up and grab me and throw me round the room. And Stacey's,
keep telling.
Huh? Yeah, I have to keep telling. And what is interesting is that the audience projects onto her and onto me. So there are moments when Eva Maria, the dancer, becomes the Lady of the Lake. And there are times when she is the lake, and there are times when she's the wind. But she's just being her. She's just improvising. Oh, it's all improvised, by the way. Of course, like when we're telling stories, we don't have a script. So when she moves, I don't know where she's coming from. I don't know what she's going to do. And Stacey's using a lot of folk motifs in the playing that she's doing, particularly folk songs. And none of us quite know exactly how we're ever going to do it. So it's always very fluid. Narratively, the same things happen to the same people in the same order. But how it happens is different every time.
It's going to be true magic. Like when I tell a story with my harp player, there's always a moment when the magic happens.
Yes, yes, yes.
We cannot make it. It just comes.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And sometimes it takes an whole hour, an hour and a half. Okay, we got it in the end, finally. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the real advantage of working with people over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I haven't worked with Stacey or Eva Maria for over a year now. But I know as soon as we're in the room, it'll take us 10 minutes to find our swing again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic. Wow, thank you so much, Michael, for taking your time.
No, my pleasure. This is my favorite subject. I don't get to talk about it that often. Most people look at me in a slightly strange way when I do. So it's great. It's great to talk to fellow storytellers because we get each other.
Mm-hmm. And people can also do a workshop with you, or they can...
Yes. Yes, indeed. I'm going to
evoke their stories.
Yeah,
I'm online from Europe, from Germany, from everywhere.
From anywhere, actually. I had a lovely cohort recently. I did a course called Sort Your Storytelling, and I had people from the States coming, which was absolutely lovely. And as a previous project I did, when someone zoomed in from Australia, I couldn't quite believe they were very hardy. So there will be what I'm going to offer next is a coaching offer, so one-to-one, and I'm going to offer four sessions for the price of three. So if you keep a look out for me on social media, I will be sending out information very soon about that. And it's good. Yeah, like I said, it's gonna be one-to-one, buy four, get one. No, buy three and you get four. And it's basically one-to-one. So it's for people who want to go that little bit further, become a little bit more fluent, a little bit more adept, and perhaps work on a specific story that they're reaching towards, but feels a little bit of a stretch at the moment.
Oh, that sounds good and really deep. It's good to choose getting deeper into a story with your support.
And it's a process I really enjoy, and it's great seeing people flourish, and it's great. People, everyone who comes, they're really committed and they crack on and do it. But what I love, waiting for that moment, the aha moment, when they get it and they go, and they just fly then.
Beautiful.
Mm.
Also, I wish you a wonderful performance at the weekend. You said it's on the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be good. Thank you so much. I have a personal wish, actually, to hear some Welsh in the end. Is this possible for a poem?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
Okay, what I'll do, there's a bit in the story of the Lady of the Lake when she calls the cattle into the lake, because she's been hit three times, and she calls the cattle into the lake. And As she runs, she shouts and she calls the cattle and she says, Miulvrech, miulvrech, a pedar caetonvrech, ar hen wynebwyn, ar lasgeigen, ar pedwar eidion glas sydd ar y mas, dew chwythyn iach adre, ar llodi bach sydd ar y bach, der y dithyn iach adre, a tarw mawr o'r isa brenin, der y dithyn iach adre. And all the cattle came from the farm, from the fields, and they ran towards the lake and they disappeared inside. Even the little black calf that was dead and hanging on the hook, ready to be butchered, levered itself off and ran after all the others, and they all disappeared down underneath the waves, and they never came out.
Oh, I do understand how you create magic. I understand it even better now.
Yeah, I'm very pleased that you wanted to hear a bit of Welsh. It's because I'm not from here. I was born in Scotland.
Okay.
Although, actually, interestingly, the bit of Scotland I was born in used to be Welsh in the 6th century. But anyway, that's a long story. There's something. So I learned Welsh when I came here in my 20s.
Right.
And I have an intellectual bias against saying that one language is somehow more magical than another. Mm-hmm. So my brain says, no, it can't be. It's just noises that are coming out of your mouth. Come on. But there's something about, I mean, maybe it's because it's to do with the connection with the landscape, so that when Welsh is uttered, it's uttered to and with the landscape. So for me, I can't help, in spite of what my intellect is trying to tell me, I can't help but feel that the language has a deep summoning quality. So when you say a name, they're in the room.
Yes.
Or you name a place, you're there.
Yes.
And I find that beautiful, strange, and unsettling.
That's what happens. That's what happens. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael.
My pleasure, Annika. It's been an absolute delight talking to you.
So people will find you. I will link everything.
Great, thank you.
For them to find you easily and listen to more and experience more and better. The best thing would be to experience your life, I can say.
Okay, great. That sounds good. There was one other tiny little thing. Well, not tiny at all, actually, but I've got a book coming out on the 20th of October.
Oh, nice.
Which is a novelized version of Culhwch and Olwen. It's called Pig Boy, and I'll send you the link to that as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. So have a good time. Enjoy telling more and more stories and creating magic.
I shall. You too, Annika. It's been lovely talking to you.
Ja, das war's für heute. So schön, dass du da bist. Du kannst jetzt einsteigen in mein Jahrestraining Erzähl dich frei. Wir starten wieder am 17. Oktober. Und das zweisprachige Erzählen ist auch ein Teil meines Jahrestrainings. This is where the magic happens. Auf meiner Webseite kannst du dich anmelden unter annikahofmann.de. Ich freue mich, wenn wir uns dort wiedersehen. Ich wünsche dir jetzt eine wundervolle Woche. Sei von Herzen umarmt, lass es dir gut gehen. Und bis nächste Woche. Alles Liebe, deine Annika.